The time is now 8:10. Scotland will be a different country if its people vote for independence in the referendum next year. That's obvious. But how different? Crucially, will it be able to keep the pound? The Scottish nationalists say yes, it will. They recognise that being forced to abandon the pound might scare a lot of people off voting for independence. But there's a report out this morning from the Treasury that says they may have to abandon the pound. The Chancellor, George Osborne, has gone to Glasgow to deliver the message. He's on the line from there now. Good morning, Chancellor.
Good morning.
Why?
Well, because it's, of course, a decision for two governments. It wouldn't just be the Scottish government, the newly independent Scottish government, but also for the rest of the United Kingdom. And I think it's unlikely that the rest of the United Kingdom would agree to, or we could make work, a euro-style currency zone with Scotland. And so it's all very well for the SNP to assert that's what they would like. I think it's unlikely it could be made to work. And therefore, if Scotland wants to keep the pound, the best way to do that is to stay in the United Kingdom.
But let's be quite clear. You, we, the non-Scots, can't throw them out.
Well, of course, it's a decision entirely for the Scottish people.
No, I mean, we can't throw them. We can't chuck them out of Stirling. Out of the Stirling Union, we cannot say you can't have the pound any longer now that you're independent. We can't do that.
Well, actually, we can say no to a currency zone, a euro-style arrangement between two foreign governments. Now, of course, Scotland could go on using the pound, rather like Panama uses the American dollar, but it would have absolutely no control at all over its currency or its macroeconomic framework. There are some countries in the world that use other countries' currencies without their consent, if you like, but it's a very, very difficult option for a country to undertake.
And in practice, we wouldn't want to, quite apart from the politics of it, we wouldn't want to do that, would we? Because it's already been made clear by your government and others that the union serves us well in every respect.
Well, I think the best arrangement for Scotland and the best arrangement for the whole United Kingdom is the current one.
Indeed, but if they vote for independence, well, you would argue still, would you not? You'd have to argue this, wouldn't you? That it is in the interest of all of us that Scotland stays in the Stirling Union as well.
No, well, I'm saying that's not the case. That's precisely what I'm saying. Well, I think Scotland would have some choices. It could either join the euro.
Indeed.
And, of course, Alex Salmond is very nervous of saying that these days.
They've backed away from that now, yeah.
Or Scotland could set up its own currency. That's what lots of countries do, of course. But, again, Alex Salmond is nervous of saying that to the Scottish people. Or they could use the pound, rather like Panama uses the American dollar, without our consent. Or they could try and negotiate with the rest of the United Kingdom, the remaining part of the United Kingdom, a currency zone. But, you know, Britain has taken a decision not to join currency zones like the euro. Britain has had poor experience with things like the ERM, where it's tried to lock its currency together with other currencies or peg its currency and the like. So it's not clear that it would be in the interests of the rest of the United Kingdom to enter into a euro-style currency zone with the rest of Scotland.
That's what I'm trying to get at, because it's not absolutely clear reading the statement that was released prior to your appearance in Glasgow this morning. It's not clear whether you are actually saying we don't want that currency zone, or we are perfectly happy to have the currency zone, depending on what negotiations, how negotiations go and what accommodation we can arrive at.
Well, what I'm saying is it's unlikely that we could make it work. Well, unlikely, because I think there are some very big questions about why the rest of the United Kingdom would want to tie itself to the economic policies of what would have become a foreign government, why it would want to tie itself to an economy that is very dependent on the price of oil and its very large financial sector. So I think these would be questions for England, Wales and Northern Ireland. And remember, for the United Kingdom, 5% of our exports, if you like, if you can call them that, go to Scotland, whereas Scotland, 30% of their output goes to the United Kingdom. So you can see why the SNP is trying to pretend to everyone that this is straightforward. They're trying to make independence an easy step, when in fact it's a very difficult step for the Scottish people and raises all sorts of questions. Of course, it's still up to the Scottish people to make that decision, but what we're doing today is setting out the facts and the analysis and the real choices they face.
Well, what you're actually doing is you're threatening them. You're trying to make that step as difficult as possible, and you're doing it for political reasons. That's the nub of this, isn't it?
No, I'm not threatening anyone, nor is the British government.
You patently are. You're saying we don't want this zone. We don't want this currency zone.
Well, I think lots of people listening to this programme in other parts of the United Kingdom other than Scotland would say, well, hold on, before I just agreed to enter a currency zone with another country, a foreign government, tie myself to the budget policies of another government over which I wouldn't have any say, or I'd have to ensure there was very tough say, tie myself to another country which has itself exposed to the oil price or to a large banking sector, you know, I would want some very serious questions asked. And I think it's unlikely, as I say, you'd be able to make that arrangement work.
And would we take over their debts, their £125 billion pounds worth of debts that John Swinney was talking about half an hour ago on this programme? Would we assume responsibility for that? Because we'd have to if we didn't have the currency zone, wouldn't we?
Well, of course, if you got to a situation where Scotland had voted to be independent, there would be a big question of how much of the national debt Scotland would have to take with it. And I think the Scottish Government's own analysis shows that the deficit in Scotland would be higher. So all of this says to me, look, the current arrangement for Scotland is the best one. There is devolution. They have real new fiscal powers to, for example, alter the rates of income tax. They've got real powers about how they spend money. But they're also part of a much bigger economic union, part of the United Kingdom, which has been the most successful political and economic union that the world has ever seen.
You know what? Desperately cynical people, I can't imagine that any exist, but they might say this is a useful diversion for you at the moment, because you've had a heck of a week, haven't you? The past week has been pretty terrible for you, and your plan A, as we, I don't know whether we still call it plan A, has been rocked to its very foundations in all sorts of ways over the past week, hasn't it? Are you getting a bit panicky?
No, first of all, it's not a diversion. This is a fundamental question about the future of the United Kingdom.
Well, the timing is handy, that's all I'm saying. But anyway, are you getting a bit panicky?
No. The answer is no. And the first point is this. This is paper has been planned for many months.
Right.
And I would say that, you know, of course you get the week-by-week economic debate and the numbers and so on. This is a fundamental question about the future of Scotland, the future of the United Kingdom, and it deserves, as indeed it's getting on this show, a proper analysis
indeed.
And proper attention.
And so does the other question deserve a proper analysis. So let's turn to that, if we may. And the IMF in particular, I mean, the fact that the IMF has now turned on you as well, that's got to be a bit upsetting for you, hasn't it?
Well, look, what the IMF has said, actually, is that the United Kingdom is forecast to grow more than Germany, than France, than the rest of the Eurozone.
It has said you are playing with fire with your fiscal policy. That's a quote.
That is one voice, one person.
He happens to be the chief economist, and he happens to have the support of Christine Lagarde, who's the boss.
No. The chief economist has a well-known set of views on this, which he has expressed in various forms over several years. The IMF will do its analysis of the British economy, as it does of all economies. It's coming to Britain in May to do that analysis. But I would say, look, the British economy, of course, faces very serious economic challenges. The fact that the rest of our neighbours are having an even tougher economic time does not help, because a lot of our exports do go there. And of course, we are recovering, as indeed the Archbishop of Canterbury has reminded us this morning, from a very deep banking crisis that continues.
Oh, he talks about a depression. Do you agree with him then?
Well, I put the Archbishop of Canterbury onto the Banking Commission.
I
agree with his analysis.
What, that we're in a depression, not just a recession? What he said.
I agree with his, and I don't use that word. I agree with his analysis that we have a slow and difficult recovery because of the problems in the banking system, and those are the problems that need addressing, which is why we have things like the funding for lending scheme
to
help
with your
businesses grow and homeowners to borrow.
So it's all down to the banks, nothing to do with the policies that you've been adopting for the last few years. It's just the banks.
I don't think anyone would claim that when I walked into the Treasury or this government got elected that the British economy was doing just fine.
No, but they might have claimed that the Chancellor of the Exchequer has a modest influence over the future of the economy. And you're saying it's all down to the banks.
No, I'm saying we're recovering from a difficult banking situation, an unbalanced economy where our exports were going to the wrong parts of the world.
America's been growing.
Well, even the US economy was flat in the last quarter of GDP. And our unemployment rate is below 8%. Our deficit has come down by a third. We've created over
a
million
jobs. Hang on, our deficit has come by a third. Figures out this morning are going to show, we knew it anyway, that you have failed to cut borrowing.
Well, I'm not going to. I do know what the figures are, but I'm not going to talk about them because they come out at 9:30. Mm. So, but what I can
but
say,
but whatever they are, it'll show it's flat, absolutely flat, what, isn't it? There has been no cut in borrowing. That's what. That's what they'll show.
But can I just let me stick with what I forecast at the budget. And when I became the Chancellor, when this government was elected, we were borrowing £159 billion a year. And what I forecast at the budget is that we would borrow £120 billion a year. This is still, of course, too much, and we need to get borrowing
and
down.
And within 24 hours, the little margin that you said we'd cut it by had already been rubbed away by the ONS.
No, we were borrowing £159 billion, and we were forecast to borrow £120 billion. That is not a little margin. That is a big reduction in the amount
Britain
is borrowing.
You're talking about... Well, that's being a bit cute with the figures, isn't it?
It's not being cute at all. We had the budget deficit was 11.5% of our national income when this government came to office. It is now forecast to be just under 8%. That is a reduction. It's a reduction of a third, thanks to the very difficult decisions we've all had to take as the British people. And as a result, you know, the British economy, when you compare it to lots of its neighbours, of course faces a difficult situation, but not nearly as difficult as those other countries that have not faced up to their problems, that have not supported their private sector, that have not made themselves more competitive so they can compete in the global race.
I'm awfully tempted. I'll try and resist it to suggest that it's enough to make a grown man weep, but I won't say that because we did see you weeping. It's a serious question, this, actually. We did see you weeping at the funeral. Huge amount of coverage of that, of course, at Lady Thatcher's funeral. Was that a sort of one-off? I mean, are you the sort of man who does weep occasionally, or were you just so overcome by emotion that was a remarkable thing to happen to you?
Well, I think weeping is putting it a bit strongly.
Tears rolling down your face.
Yes, I welled up a bit because I thought it was a very emotional and moving occasion and at times overwhelming. And, you know, I think it was a fitting tribute to someone's life. And in a sense, a great state occasion as well. And, you know, the combination of the sermon and the music and so on made for a very, very powerful and emotional moment.
No, indeed. I just wonder whether you are the sort of person who does weep occasionally. I mean, because some men would say, you know, I never do it. You know, I'm much too macho to do that sort of thing. But do you occasionally? I mean, was that a one-off?
Well, I was caught on camera, so I can't deny that it.
but I just want, as I say, I'm suggesting for a second there's anything to be ashamed of. A lot of people would say, you know, very strong men weep occasionally. You know, I just wonder whether you have, you know, whether you do it occasionally.
Do what occasionally?
Cry.
Well, occasionally I get a tear in my eye. Sometimes just to when I listen to today's programme headlines, but on this occasion, it was a much more moving moment.
Fair enough. George Osborne, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.